It's 1900 UTC, and that means it's time for That's News to Me. I'm your host, DJ Marcus. Let's see what's happening in the world today.
All right, we're here, we're alive. It is 1904 almost UTC, which means, I'm running late. Sorry about that. My network is acting up. Looks like my TMUX doesn't want to attach, so hopefully I'll be able to get in comm. If you want to join in on the chat during live shows, you can join in to comm too. Just SSH over to SDF and type comm at the prompt, press G for go to, and then Anon Radio in all lowercase to go to the Anon Radio room. And then there we go. Big shout out to those that are already here, Ratsu and Harry Larry. Thank you so much for being here and tuning in. Just thanks to everybody for being here. We're going to get, Tobe's mostly here too. So we're just going to go ahead and get everything launched up. Work has, just to fill you in, work has made me just an unhappy camper today. So I don't have a ton of stories, but I've got enough, I think, to fill out the time. And if not, we can always play some music. It'll be fine. All right, let's get going the way we always start.
World news.
That's right, we whirl up the news first. Hyundai and Kia say Apple car deal now off and see $8.5 billion wiped off market value. South Korea's Hyundai Motor Company on Monday said it is not now in talks with Apple Inc. on autonomous electric cars, just a month after it confirmed early-stage talks with the tech giant, sending the automaker's shares skidding. Wiping $3 billion off its market value, Hyundai's stock slid 6.2%. Share in its affiliate, Kia Corp, which had been tipped in local markets, local media reports as the likely operation partner for Apple, tumbled 15%, a $5.5 billion hit. The announcement brings the curtain down on weeks of internal divisions at Hyundai Motor Co. Group, parent to both automakers, about the potential tie-up, with some executives raising concerns about becoming a contract manufacturer for the U.S. tech giant in a tie-up reminiscent of electric firm Foxconn's role in making device for Apple like the iPhone. That would have been exciting. Apple and Hyundai are in discussion, but as at its early stage, nothing has been decided, Hyundai said, before releasing subsequent statements that removed all mentions of Apple, but said Hyundai was receiving electric car cooperation requests from parties it didn't identify. So this will be interesting to see how that plays out. But Kevin Yu, an analyst at eBest Investment and Securities, said, "It seems clear that Hyundai Motor Group has not been too happy with dealing with Apple. They made it clear that they do not want to be treated just as Apple's supplier or manufacturer." So that's how that's going. It does seem Apple's partners in itself definitely kind of have a special relationship. It's not quite a normal business partnership. Welcome, W. Visser. Thanks for tuning in. All right. So, search on for more than 200 after India glacier fractures, sweeping away all before it. So, Indian rescuers searched on Monday for more than 200 people missing after part of a remote Himalayan glacier broke away, sweeping away bridges, breaking dams, and sending a torrent of water, rocks, and construction debris down a mountain valley. Sunday's disaster below Nanda Devi, India's second highest peak, swept away the small Rishiganga hydroelectric project and damaged a bigger one further down the Dwaliganga River, being built by state firm NTPC. That's November Tango Papa Charlie. 18 bodies have been removed so far, officials said. Most of the missing were people working on the two projects, part of the many the government has been building deep in the mountains of Uttarakhand state as part of the development push. As of now, around 203 people are missing, State Chief Minister Trevindra Singh Rawat said. Maud Firuz Azam, Assistant Professor, Glaciology and Hydrology at the Indian Institute of Technology in Indore, said a hanging glacier fractured. Our current hypothesis is that the water accumulated and locked in the debris snow below the glacier was released when the glacier rock mass fell, he said. Videos on social media showed water surging through a small dam site, washing away construction equipment and bringing down small bridges. Everything was swept away, people, cattle, and trees. Sangram Singh Rawat, a former village council member of Rainy, the site closest to the Rishikanga project, told media. Experts said it snowed heavily last week in the Nanda Devi area, and it was possible that some of the snow had started melting, and that may have led to the avalanche. So, very interesting. I thought that was kind of cool. It was decent news, at least news to me. Just because the farmers' protest is kind of soaking up a lot of, or most of the bandwidth when you think about India these days. And we go over here a little bit to Myanmar, or Burma. Myanmar's military leader said on Monday his junta would hold a new election and hand power to the winner as tens of thousands of people took to the street for a third day to protest against the coup that overthrew Aung San Suu Kyi's civilian government. Senior General Min Aung Hlaing was speaking in a televised address, his first to the country since last Monday's military takeover. He did not say when the election would be held, but repeated claims that last November's poll, won by Suu Kyi National Defense League for Democracy, had been fraudulent. In the capital, Naypyi Pyataw, crowds of protesters chanted anti-coup slogans and told police they should serve the people, not the military, according to media and live feed of events. Police turned water cannons on protesters and warned they might use live fire if the demonstrators didn't disperse, but the protests ended without bloodshed. Hey, welcome, X1. Yeah, TX and Incom, talking about THX 1138, that early George Lucas film. It was pretty cool. It sounded really nice. It was a little trippy. Definitely something to take, watch while doing psychedelics, for sure. The U.S. Embassy said it had received reports that a curfew had been imposed in Yangon and Mandalay, the second biggest city, from 8 p.m. to 4 a.m. local time. Generals had already tried to justify their takeover on the grounds of election fraud, rejected by the election committee, and had promised a new poll. Min Aung Hlaing reiterated that position in his address on Monday, saying the junta would form a true and disciplined democracy, different to previous eras of military rule. The election committee must be reformed, he said, accusing it of using the coronavirus pandemic as the excuse to prevent fair campaigning. So, we'll see how that turns out. It's definitely a scary time. Lots of violence going on there. Well, if you really want to talk about scary, a new case of the Ebola virus has been detected in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo near the city of Butembo, and the infected person has died, the health ministry said on Sunday. A woman was found with symptoms of the deadly Ebola virus in the town of Biena on February 1st and died in hospital in Butembo on February 3rd. She was married to a man who had contracted the virus in a previous outbreak. The provincial response team is already hard at work. We are supported by the national response team, which will visit Butembo shortly, the statement said. The announcement potentially marks the start of Congo's 12th Ebola outbreak since the virus was discovered near the Ebola River in 1976, more than double any other country. It comes nearly 3 months after Congo announced the end to its 11th outbreak, hundreds of miles away in the west, which infected 130 people and killed 55. That outbreak overlapped with an earlier one in the east that killed more than 2,200 people, the second most in the disease's history. The emergence of more cases could complicate efforts to eradicate COVID-19, which has infected 23,600 people and killed 681 in the Congo, Democratic Republic of Congo. A vaccination campaign is expected to start in the first half of this year. Congo's equatorial forests are a natural reservoir for the Ebola virus, which causes severe vomiting and diarrhea and is spread through contact with bodily fluids. So, very scary. It'd be awful to have both of those things going on in your community at once. Now we jump over to Ecuador. Ecuador's socialist candidate, Arauz, or it's A-R-A-U-Z, that's Alpha Romeo Alpha Uncle Zulu, but I'm not sure how to say that. I'm going to say Arauz. Arauz claims resounding victory as election set for April runoff. Leftist economist Andres Arauz claimed a resounding victory as exit polls predicted he would face right-wing ex-banker Guillermo Lasso in a runoff after polls closed Sunday in Ecuador's general election. Though it was marred by long lines of people waiting to cast ballots, as coronavirus restrictions caused chaos, Two exit polls showed Arroz had topped the vote with 34.9 to 36.2% ahead of Lasso on 21 to 21.7%. To win outright, a candidate needs 50% plus one vote, or 40%, and a 10-point lead over the nearest rival. Arroz, 35, is protege of former President Rafael Correa, who currently lives in Belgium, where his wife was born, evading a conviction for corruption. Mr. Arroz to you. Resounding victory in all regions of our beautiful country. Our victory is 2-1 ahead of the banker, Arroz wrote on Twitter, although he urged supporters to wait for the official results before celebrating. The first results are due to be published on Sunday night. And I grabbed this story. Well, it just was updated 6 minutes ago, so I'm guessing they were updated last night. We'll see. All right. Well, we're about halfway through the show, and so that means that it's time to jump over.
Get the news over with. I want to hear the music.
That's right.
Get the news over with. Time. I want to hear the music.
It's time to play a song. And so that's what we're going to do. All it takes is a little typing. And to search the right folder. Don't search your downloads for your songs. You won't find any. Okay, let's make sure this is the right length. All right. This one, it says it's Willie Nelson, but the duration of the song makes me question it. Anyway, this is labeled, and hopefully it is, it's called Because of You from the Willie and Leon album, or Willie Nelson and Leon Russell record.
Listening to Anon Radio, powered by SDF Public Access Unix System.
That's 100% correct. Thanks, W. Visser. And thanks for tuning in and listening. We're at 17 minutes past the hour. Means we've got about 12 minutes and some change before the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe. That happens every day at 1930 UTC, not just Monday through Friday like this show, but just Sunday through Sunday. Lots of cool synthesizers and stuff happening during the cold winter months. And then in the springtime, or if you go into the archives, you go back, listen to Hunting for Marmots and going out to Heron Haven and having a good time. Also mention, every after the Doobie Skulls Committee, that's 30 minutes, so at 20 hours, 8 o'clock UTC, there's usually a show. There's usually a good show. Harry Larry has one today. I think Tuesday's open, but then Wednesday through Friday, or the rest of the week, really, is open, so, or has somebody in it. So that's definitely a good time to listen. So thanks a lot for tuning in. All right, We've got three more stories, really, that I lined up to talk about. First one comes to us from our friends at the World Socialist website. That's one I like to say, WhiskeySierra.org. And here we go. Chicago Teachers Union endorses a bargain with death, agrees to in-person classes. Chicago Public Schools, or CPS is what we'll be calling them in the article, Democratic Mayor Lori Lightfoot and the leadership of the Chicago Teachers Union, or the CTU, came to an agreement Sunday on a deadly plan to reopen schools in the third largest district in the U.S. at the height of the pandemic. So you can tell this has clearly got a different angle, or has an angle to it. After Lightfoot and CPS CEO Janice Jackson announced the tentative agreement, the CTU held an all-membership meeting at which only top bureaucrats were allowed to speak in an effort to browbeat resistant educators and push through the sellout deal. The union is scheduled to hold a House of Delegates vote on the deal Monday. If approved, it would then send the tentative agreement to the full membership for a vote. There's enormous opposition among rank-and-file educators to this bargain with death, which would resume in-person learning for tens of thousands of students and staff by March 8th, with the first group returning February 11th. The Chicago Educators Rank and File Safety Committee is spearheading the fight to organize this opposition in order to defeat the sellout deal and orient educators towards uniting with workers in every industry to prepare for a nationwide general strike. In a statement published last Tuesday, the committee warned that the CTU would reach a rotten deal and stressed there's nothing to negotiate. Reopening schools during the pandemic is not negotiable. Lives and health are not negotiable. What is unfolding in the city is the latest and among the most damning exposures of the unions and their pseudo-left supporters. The present leadership of the CTU emerged out of the Caucus of Rank-and-File Educators, or CORE, C-O-R-E, and has controlled the union for the past decade, based on a social justice, in quotes, platform centered on the promotion of identity politics and the subordination of educators to the Democratic Party. The CTU betrayed the powerful teacher strike of 2012 and 2019, accepting school closures, mass layoffs, and the expansion of charter schools. They are now the linchpin of the Biden administration's homicidal campaign to reopen the majority of K-8 schools across the U.S. by the end of March. So there's strong feelings here. I'll just go through the key points. Line number one, the CTU's reopening plan is safe and scientific. Line number two, Chicago educators are isolated and a strike would not make a difference. Line 3, the CTU has fought hard to reach this deal, which members should accept. Don't buy into it. Or you can. I would just encourage you to read both sides of the coin if you are questioning. I'd also take this time to say, give them hell, give Amazon hell, you guys down in Georgia. I hope you do vote to unionize, and you can somehow keep bringing light to the fact that businesses today are super hostile to unions, and even the big giant tech companies or almost any big company is really scared of unions because, believe it or not, even if you as a worker think you're doing all right, making your 60K or 100K or whatever, just know that they wouldn't be paying you that much if they could hire somebody, or I guess the thing is they would pay a lot more if they had to get the same thing. The value of your labor is a lot higher than you might think it is. All right. Well, definitely do not buy single-sided coins. That's always important. If you do come across any 2D objects, try to capture them because, ooh-wee, I bet scientists would like to see those. All right. Boom. Let's jump over. This is a rights thing. So this is something that it's a feeling thing. It's something that that's news to me, not so much a huge thing, unless you have any property or something. All right, here's the headline. Indiana argues that the state should be able to take everything you own if you commit a drug crime. In 2013, Tyson Timms sold drugs to an undercover cop. Suffering from a history of addiction, he relapsed after the death of his father the previous year. In 2021, the state of Indiana is arguing why it should have the right to steal his car and assets. And just so you know, this is also biased. It's got a lot of strong language. This comes to us from a libertarian magazine called Reason.com. So take it with a grain of salt, but the actual story I thought was worth telling. Come on. Click the button. All right. In 2021, the state of Indiana is arguing White should have the right to steal his car and assets of those like him. The two may seem entirely unrelated. That's because, in many ways, they are. Tim's purchased a $42,000 Land Rover in January 2013 with his father's life insurance payout. The transaction was divorced from any drug offense, but under a practice called civil forfeiture, states are permitted to seize property if someone's merely suspected of committing a crime, often even without an incident. Indictment. In Indiana, prosecutors may proceed simply with a preponderance of evidence. Appearing before the Indiana Supreme Court yesterday, the state argued that it was plainly constitutional when they robbed Tim's of his Land Rover nearly 8 years ago, the third time they had made such an argument before the state's high court over the last 4 years. In May 2020, Tim's reclaimed the car, but only after a legal saga that saw his case ping-pong up and down the rungs of the U.S. court system. Indiana's high court rejected Tim's initial plea, noting that the U.S. Supreme Court had not yet ruled on whether the Eighth Amendment, which protects against excessive fines and fees, applies to states. In February 2019, the Supreme Court of the United States said it does. The Indiana Supreme Court then created guidance on what qualifies as excessive. Welcome, exile. Thanks for tuning in. Welcome back, I guess. But instead of deciding on Tim's case specifically, they passed the buck to a lower court with new rules in hand. A trial court ruled in his favor in April 2020, writing that seizing the vehicle, which was worth four times the max value or max penalty for the crime, was indeed excessive. Indiana was unfazed, though, and the state is once again asking the Supreme Court to hold there's no proportionality limit on how much property they can forfeit a Bugatti if it goes 5 miles over the speed limit, regardless of what an obvious mismatch and injustice that would be, says Sam Gedge, an attorney at the Institute for Justice, the legal nonprofit representing Tim's. Their alternative argument isn't much better. The state maintains that even if proportionality is on the table, when it comes to punishing anybody who struggled with drug addiction, no punishment is too high. So the state can basically take everything you own, and that shouldn't violate the excessive fines clause. Aloha. Backspace. I don't know what's going on. Calm is always an interesting place. It's an adventure. But anyway, civil forfeiture is bad. Indiana's trying to make it worse. So that's kind of a bummer. And the last thing, this was a book review that I kind of liked. Sorry. It's kind of like that. Today is a bit everywhere. Work is making me bananas. I would mention that Elon Musk threw $1.5 billion into Bitcoin, so that's thrown the markets into a tizzy. It's really funny because these unregulated markets, they are really volatile and cool, and they're fun to make, like, play around in and make some money. But whenever rich people find out about it or get involved and start making waves, suddenly you realize why these regulations are there, because, geez Louise, it's so lame that all Elon Musk or the Warren Buffetts have to do is be like, oh yeah, they go out and they'll just go ahead and buy a commodity or buy the thing and then be like, oh yeah, I'm going to invest a bunch of money in that. And then everybody runs to buy money into the same thing because they want to be successful. And yeah, so anyway, a lot of exchanges are struggling under the weight of all the people throwing money at Bitcoins. So anyway, that's just how that goes. And China's blocked Clubhouse, a buzzy social media app, after the country flocked to it to discuss politics. So, very sad. I think I paid a year's membership with Bitcoin to SDF too, Harry Larry. Heck yeah. I've kind of run out of gas, but, let's see. Anything else magical in the news? There's an impeachment going on. The lawyers for Trump say that they don't think it's legal because he's not the president anymore. And GOP Representative Ron Wright dies after COVID diagnosis. Sad for his family. And anything else? No. Vehicle crash. Myanmar. Oh, AstraZeneca is having trouble in South Africa. That variant, the AstraZeneca virus, is... AstraZeneca vaccine is proving to be less effective against the latest variant coming out of South Africa, which is causing concerns from people. Oh yeah, Elon Musk is also hyping up Dogecoin, along with Snoop Dogg, who posted, they both posted memes of themselves with Dogecoins, which is a bit frustrating just because the current, that crypto is bad. It's a meme. It has no, it's like the only reason it has any value, it's insane. It's a limitless supply. There's no scarcity. Mining, it's very easy. I don't know why it's gone up in value. But anyway, such is life. Thanks for tuning in. Enjoy the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe.
Well, that sound means that our time's come to an end. Thanks for listening. I'll be back tomorrow and every weekday, Monday through Friday, before the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe. 7.